This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Jason Staples here. Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. Talking about the Florida State win over Louisville. Florida State wins 41-20 to run the ACC unbeaten streak to 28 games, one game away from tying the record set by the Florida State teams between 1992 and 1995. Which, by the way, it's more impressive to do that now than it was in 1995. I should just get that out of the way right now. First of all, the game is different now than it was between 92 and 95, mostly because of the difference in scholarships available. Back in 1991, when Florida State was building for that run in between 92 and 95, teams were offering 95 scholarships. Division 1A, what is now called FBS teams, were giving 95 scholarships. That was reduced to 92 in the 92 season, 88 and 93, and then finally down to the current level of 85 now. And what that had the effect of doing is reducing the distance between the very top teams and the teams in the middle, some of the teams that, you know, in other teams in conferences and so on that might otherwise be able to beat you. Because when you're Florida State and you have an extra 10 scholarships on your roster that you can order or that you can offer, you're able to pull 10 more quality guys that don't go to some of those other teams. And that's true for Miami and on down the line. Some of these very top teams are able to stockpile more talent effectively. The margins are much thinner on 85 scholarships, where an injury costs you that much more, where there's more risk if, you know, you have fewer players that you can have as busts in your class. Everything has to be a little bit sharper. And then those other players that would otherwise be at some of those top teams with the 95 scholarship limit are on some of the middle tier teams instead. So you're more likely to lose those games for multiple reasons as a result of the fewer scholarships. So just straight off the top, there's a lot more parity in college football today than there was in the early 90s. And this team is about to go, if they're able to beat Georgia Tech this week, which is going to be a tall affair, this team is about to tie the record for the most conference wins in a row in the ACC with that team. That to me is just remarkable. It attests to how strong the program that Jimbo Fisher has built is at this point. It really is. At this point, you know, obviously Jim Harbaugh and Jim McElwain are getting a lot of credit and discussion over, you know, coach of the year type honors, and deservedly so, because they've done tremendous jobs turning around those programs since taking over in their first year. But I'll tell you this right now, if this Florida State team continues to develop like it is, and if by chance they're able to beat Clemson and go further than anybody expected and get into a playoff scenario, Jimbo Fisher probably deserves every bit as much. I would say he does deserve every bit as much discussion for Coach of the Year honors as either of those guys. Because this team, given the youth, given a graduate transfer quarterback and all these other things, has no business being in the same kind of position that the 2014 and 2013 teams were. And right now, this team, with the way that they played against a good Louisville team, you got to wonder whether this team is actually playing better right now than the 2014 team was at this point in the year, which is kind of remarkable. I mean, it really is remarkable. And you know, getting to discussion of the game, that said, there are a few things that are concerning, I think, or should be concerning for Florida State fans going forward. The first is whether this was effectively winds up being a bit of a Pyrrhic victory for Florida State, with Trey Marshall's injury being something that right now looks like it could. And again, this is being recorded on Sunday, so I don't know for sure what the injury is. All we know is that Jimbo Fisher said it don't look good after the game, and the reports that have leaked out have suggested that he may have torn a biceps, and if he did tear his bicep, then he's done for the year. And Trey Marshall is an instrumental component of the Florida State defense, with his versatility, his ability to cover and to work sort of as a linebacker. With Florida State being as thin at the linebacker position as they've been, the thing that they were depending on in this year was the ability of Nate Andrews and Trey Marshall in particular, and also Derwin James as he got integrated into the defense, to be versatile guys that could play in the box and outside the box, cover and do a lot of different things, and give you the flexibility so that you didn't need necessarily those linebackers. You could do a lot of that and stop the run and still be effective against the pass by having those versatile safety type players on the field. Well, as of right now, Trey Marshall and Nate Andrews are both out. Andrews didn't play against Louisville with the bone bruise in his knee, and Trey Marshall missed again the bulk of this game. And you could see, as soon as Marshall went out, you could see that Louisville was able to pick on the secondary, and there were a couple blown assignments by Derwin James and some communication errors in the secondary that led to Louisville's first touchdown. And as of right now, you know, that's a real concern moving forward, is that Florida State's back seven right now is not what it was expected to be coming into the year. Coming into the year, you knew one thing about this Florida State defense. There were a lot of questions everywhere else. You had questions about the defensive tackles. You had questions about the guys on the edge. You had questions about the linebackers, particularly the linebacker spot other than Terrence Smith. But the one thing that you knew was that Florida State's dime package was going to be really good, with basically Nate Andrews in that money role, with Jalen Ramsey and Marquez White on the outside, with Tyler Hunter at the star position, with safety help over the top from LaMarcus Brutus, from Derwin James and Trey Marshall. You know, that's seven defensive backs you knew you could depend on. Put six of those guys on the field at once, and you've got a really, really good dime package. That was the one thing we knew coming into this season. And as of right now, Trey Marshall and Nate Andrews, two of the most important pieces of that dime package, are gone. As is, they're not on the field. And as is Terrence Smith. So, and Smith was the other component of that. You know, you had six defensive backs, and you had that seventh guy, that linebacker, who could play like a defensive back and like a linebacker. So you the one thing you knew was that Florida State's back seven in a dime scenario would be as good as anybody's. And right now, at least three of those key components are not on the field. We're not on the field for most of the Miami and Louisville games, and you could see that right now Florida State is not nearly as strong as they need to be in those scenarios. So if Trey Marshall winds up being out for the rest of this year, which is possible, or if he ends up missing a significant amount of time, if not, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, as of right now, you've got two starting safeties out, with Nate Andrews and Nick Marshall out, and you've got your best linebacker out. That's not a recipe for quality back seven play. And of course, you know, you see people on Twitter and fans on message boards and so on that are belly aching about Charles Kelly and the defensive staff not putting players in the best positions and all these things, and how much the defense is struggling. Guys, seriously, you're missing two starting safeties and your best linebacker. How many teams in the country are going to be looking really good in the back seven without two starting safeties and their best linebacker? The one linebacker on the team that covers really well. So, you know, let's be real about what expectations, you know, let's have realistic expectations about what you can do when you're not playing with a full deck. So, you know, this defense, and the other thing to remember, Florida State has won 35 out of the last 36 games. And we have people out there who are basically accusing the coaching staff of not playing the best players and not putting players in good positions to succeed, which I think right now is ludicrous. I think they're doing an awfully good job. Now, there are a few things that, yes, there are a few things that are worthy of criticism. I do think that there are places where there are times where they're not disguising blitzes really well. There are times where you can see, you know, a misalignment or something here or there where you could potentially avoid giving up a play because, you know, somebody should recognize it from the box and maybe get a timeout called or whatever. There are minor things that you can complain about. But overall, this defense has been playing at a top 10, at worst, top 15 level. And that's without those starters, with major youth contributing on the field. I mean, you got a true freshman who is not 100%, Josh Sweat. You've got a true freshman in Derwin James who made the biggest play of this game on defense, forcing a fumble, which was recovered by Josh Sweat. You've got a mash unit at linebacker. You're missing two safeties, and you're not going to expect... You can't expect this to be the 2013 defense. We talked about this on the last podcast. This defense does not have, at this point, elite personnel. It's got really good personnel in a number of spots, but it's playing like a very good defense, which is matching up with the personnel that it has. JV and Elliott came in the second half here after Tyler Hunter had struggled a little bit in this game, struggled more. And you can see this is going to be the plan of attack for teams until Florida State finds a way to amend it without Trey Marshall on the field. And Tyler Hunter at that star position defending slot receivers, teams are going to put their best receiver at the slot, and they're going to try to get one-on-one matchups with Hunter and try to take advantage of that. Florida State's going to have to find some solutions to that, and it's not going to be easy. They're going to need to potentially bring along some of the young talent, maybe a Tavares McFadden, maybe a Marcus Lewis, maybe one of those guys steps up in practice, maybe. Maybe a Malik Jackson or somebody. I mean, right now he's in the doghouse. Jackson's in the doghouse, and then with the two true freshmen, you can't rely on true freshmen. You just can't. A good example of why is the two big plays that were given up when Derwin James, who is way ahead of where a true freshman normally would be, in part because he was an early enrollee, and in part because he's very bright and he's physically a stud. But, you know, he gave up a couple big plays in this game by not being in the right spot. And as of right now, the decision that the coaching staff has to make is you have a choice. You can put Tyler Hunter out there, who he's just not been the same player since that injury. And this is not a mental thing. He's mentally he's there. It's just you can see basically what's going on is his mind knows what to do. His body's just not totally cooperating. He just is not physically able to stay with the Stacy Coley or even a James Quick here. He's just not there. But he is at least in the right spots. So these guys are making, by and large, contested catches. He's just getting beat physically, which, you know, at some point you have a decision to make if you're a coach. Is it better to let a guy get beat physically or to have a guy who's going to be in the right spot? You know, at least if he's going to get beat, it's not because he's going to blow an assignment. Or are you going to stick a freshman out there? And the difference is going to be instead of getting beat physically, where, you know, you have a guy making a contested catch for a touchdown, you have a guy with nobody around him making a catch for a touchdown because there's a bust. That's the issue. That's why freshmen don't play. And we'll talk about this much more in the next podcast, where I'm gonna spend a little bit more time specifically on this discussion. But JV and Elliott came in for Hunter and played admirably. He's a kid that's in the right spots, and was able to sort of stop the bleeding a little bit there. But, you know, the concern is, you know, against Georgia Tech, that's not as big of a concern. Hunter has been fine in the box, and you know they don't have guys that put you in the same position in terms of putting a guy in the slot and beating you one-on-one. So that's not as big of a concern. Georgia Tech doesn't scare you there, and Syracuse certainly doesn't scare you there. But by the Clemson game, Florida State's going to need to have some way of making sure that Clemson can't just stick Artavis Scott in the slot and basically pass the ball down the field as much as at will, because they've got a guy who can really blaze in the slot. They're going to have to find a way to scheme around that, or to find somebody to put into that role. So as of right now, I mean, that's Florida State has moved forward. This team has improved tremendously, but there are still some warts that if they don't get fixed, there are still some flaws that are showing on this team that if they don't get fixed, this team, they're not going to beat Clemson, and they may not beat Florida, and they may lose another one. This team still has several losable games left on the schedule, including this week against Georgia Tech. I mean, Georgia Tech has lost five games now, and the total record of the teams that they've been beaten by is 27-4. So you know their losses. You talk about quality losses; those are about as good a quality losses as you can get. So that Georgia Tech team now is 2-5, and everybody's sort of written them off as terrible. But they've been competitive in most of those games. It's a good football team. It's still a good football team. So now the funny thing is, we're in a position where in the preseason, I was telling everybody Georgia Tech was overrated. Now I'm telling everybody Georgia Tech is underrated. So, but again, this team has some flaws. Florida State has some flaws that if they don't get fixed, they're not going to be successful moving forward. And one of those other flaws that's showing right now is Dalvin Cook's hamstring. Dalvin Cook did not look healthy in this game. He was not as close to 100% as he was against Miami. You could see he just didn't have the same gear when he was moving, particularly in the first half. It looked like he got warmed up a little bit more and settled in the second half. But you know that's the sort of thing. A hamstring injury generally nags, and you can't just play through it without having some without continuing to have problems. I mean, it just nags and nags and nags, and it doesn't go away. As long as you keep playing, it's going to continue to grab and continue to have issues. So they're going to continue to have to manage that. And the less he has to carry the ball, the less he has to actually be active the next couple weeks, the better. But you know, the question is, can you beat Georgia Tech without giving him a big load? Can you? You know, I think you can beat Clemson, I think you can beat Syracuse without that. Which ideally, you go in with him as rested as possible against Clemson. But as of right now, you know, the concern is that Dalvin Cook is still the Florida State offense to a large degree, and he's nowhere near healthy. Despite all the negatives that did come up in this game with Trey Marshall's injury and some of the weaknesses that Florida State continues to show in the back seven, and Dalvin Cook's continued problems with that hamstring, continued struggles there, there are a lot of positives too. For one, I mean, it's hard to imagine Everett Golson playing any better than he is right now. I mean, you're talking about a guy who turned the football over 22 times last year. And, you know, of course, everybody was talking about coming into this year about how it was such a risk for Florida State to put their offense in his hands because of his penchant for turning it over, facing a defense that was tied for the longest streak, having forced a turnover in a game, 21 games in a row that Louisville had forced a turnover. And Florida State goes its sixth straight game without an offensive turnover, which, by the way, the school record before this was two. They'd never gone three games without an offensive turnover at Florida State. Now they've gone six, and that's with Everett Golson at quarterback. At some point, you got to think Jimbo Fisher is just trolling Brian Kelly. Kelly, who could not get Everett Golson cured of the turnover bit, but Jimbo Fisher and Randy Sanders seem to have got him. They've got him playing not just turnover free ball, but generally risk free. I mean, you're talking. There was one pass broken up in this game, one pass breakup. So there weren't even any opportunities for interceptions in this game. I mean, usually turnovers have a large amount. There's a large amount of luck involved in turnovers because fumble recoveries generally even out to about 50%. You can force if you force a lot of fumbles, then yes, that's one thing. But you're only going to recover about half the fumbles that you force. And interceptions are to some degree a factor of, you know, getting good bounces, catching balls off of deflections, things like that. But when you're the part of turnovers that's not luck is just playing risk-free football and not putting the ball in a position where it can be broken up or intercepted or whatever. And that's what you're seeing from Everett Golson right now. That to me is what's most impressive about the way he's been playing is now you're seeing him actually make throws down the field. You're seeing him take risks, calculated, controlled risks within the confines of the offense. And, I mean, you don't throw for 372 yards without throwing it downfield a little bit. And, you know, 26 of 38 for 372 yards, three touchdowns. And that's with actually a decent amount of pressure in this game. He was hurried nine times and sacked twice, and there were three or four places where he was near sacks, and he either escaped and got completed a pass or threw the football away, making very good decisions. Again, live to see another play. I mean, this offense is very different with Everett Golson playing this way, and if Dalvin Cook's hamstring holds up at all. And Everett Golson plays like this, then wow, okay. This offense then becomes a strength, not a concern. So, you know, coming into this game, Florida State had 10 passes broken up on the year against them. Again, that's absurdly low. And about half of those are batted balls at the line of scrimmage. So, I mean, again, there just haven't been a whole lot of risks taken, and now they're getting comfortable throwing, you know, that post route to Travis Rudolph to put the game away was one example of great throw, put it over Josh Harvey Clemens. You know, you had a guy in robber position there and just stuck it right over him into the back of the end zone. Safe throw, because if it's not, as long as you put enough loft on it, as long as you put enough arc on it, you're fine. You just can't bring that down, but it's a safe throw because if it's not complete, it goes through the end zone. So it's a nice calculated risk, perfect throw. That's the sort of thing we're seeing from Golson right now as his confidence and comfort level builds, and you can really see that he's starting to get it. Not just starting now, he's getting it. And all the more, if you had told me at the beginning of the year that the most reliable and consistent and best wide receiver on the Florida State team would be Kermit Whitfield, I don't think I would have believed you. I would have said, yeah, maybe a guy give you a couple big plays. But like I said in last week's analysis of the Miami game, you're talking about a guy who he's become a good route runner. Coming into the Louisville game, he was responsible 80% of the times he's been targeted on the year. Coming into the Louisville game, he had actually made a catch on 80% of the targets that had been thrown to him, which is a very good rate. And he had 9 catches on 10 targets against Miami for 172 yards, including a 70-yarder. And, you know, kid still can run. He's not as fast as he was as a freshman. I think that's pretty clear from watching him run. But there still aren't very many guys in the country who are catching him. He doesn't have quite the burst that he did as a freshman, which, you know, again, ask Auburn about that. But he's still pretty fast. This team still needs, though, to get another one or two wide receivers integrated into the offense. I thought the tight ends, Izzo and Saunders, played well in this game. Saunders with an excellent catch on that 21-yarder coming back to the football. Izzo with an excellent catch on the inside there for a touchdown. Izzo blocked well in this game. So, you know, they're coming along a little bit, but as they move forward, you hope that you see some of the bigger wide receivers, some of the youth that's now getting healthy, get a little bit of time. It's getting to the point in the season where they're getting close to ready, but they have to be consistent. And again, with Whitfield and some of these others, if they're going to play like this, then there's less of a concern there. But they do need to have another guy on the outside, whether that's Rudolph or Lane or whoever. They're going to need to get a little bit more in terms of down the field threat as they move forward. The other really good sign in this game continues to be the way that the defensive line has played. They had 5 sacks in this game. That's the most a Florida State team has had since against Idaho in 2013 when they had 7. That's the most sacks against a Power 5 opponent that Florida State's had since at Maryland in 2012 when they also had 5. So, I mean, that says something. And they could have had more sacks. They actually missed on a couple in the backfield. And, you know, and that's in a game where the game plan was to keep Lamar Jackson in the pocket and force him to beat you with his arm, which worked pretty well. He did make that one ridiculous 50-plus yard throw, dropping it into a bucket to James Quick over LaMarcus Brutus. Nothing you can do there. You tip your cap. You say, well, you know, you did what we wanted to force you to do, and you just made a great throw. Sometimes that happens. But otherwise, I mean, they got what they wanted. And they were getting pressure even from 3-man rushes most of the time in this game. So, you know, this defensive line continues to grow, to build forward. I thought this was the best Nile Lawrence Stamples probably ever looked. He continues to play very well. I thought, again, Noddy and Christmas continue to play well. There's been a lot of growth on that defensive line and you know, just in time for Georgia Tech, where they're going to need tremendous play from the defensive line and outstanding work on the edge. It was a little bit discouraging if you're a Florida State fan to see Lorenzo Featherston still clearly not right. Pretty hobbled on that knee when he tried to do anything but go straight forward. Still some pain, pretty clear. But lots of pressure from the outside otherwise. Derwin James, when they do decide to rush him, is tremendous in that role. And that's where, again, Trey Marshall not being on the field doesn't let him do that as much. That's a big loss. And the other thing is the outside cornerbacks, Jalen Ramsey and Marquez White, teams aren't even really challenging them at this point. I mean, White didn't get targeted hardly at all against Miami. Jalen gave up 2 plays against Miami, both on back shoulders. But teams aren't even really challenging the outside corners. Part of that's because, again, they've been targeting Hunter and that weaker interior right now in the back 7. But, wow. I mean, the outside corners have been great. And when you can take away two top receivers just by having your outside corners be very good, that's tremendous. Now, again, they need to find a third guy that's going to be reliable, a little bit more reliable on that interior, and try to make sure that teams can't motion and get an advantageous matchup by putting a quality guy in that interior. Particularly, again, Clemson and Florida are the two teams left on the schedule that can do that. But overall, there's a lot to be excited about if you are a Florida State fan moving forward. It's a team that is young. It has a lot of flaws. But there's a lot of things that, you know, they're showing at this point. This is the first time that the Florida State team has really put a team away in quite a while. They had the chance to knock Louisville out, and they did. Another piece of growth. Another really good sign for a team that again, it's on schedule. It's actually a little ahead of schedule. And we'll see whether they can make it through next week, through next week in Atlanta, Georgia Tech. To get to the next second group of three with Syracuse and Clemson, and NC State before closing out the year. So, you know, if they can make it through there, they can make it through Atlanta. And again, with the way the defensive tackles have been playing, with the way the corners have been playing, you think that bodes well. It's going to be really it's shaping up to be a very interesting second half of the season. Hard to ask for more from the first half, other than perhaps a little bit better injury luck. Well, that's going to do it for us today. And again, just before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter @DocStaples. You can catch my stuff over at NoleDigest.com as well. You can also follow Seminoles Radio, Seminoles Sports Radio, at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. And make sure to catch the next podcast, which will cover some of the issues in terms of playing young players. Yet again, we'll talk about that. And we'll do a little bit more, a little bit closer analysis of some of the things on that Florida State showed in this Louisville game. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.